You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You just been listening to the Hot Texas Swing Band doing their rendition of what? Hot Texas,
their
right?
Their own song, Hot Texas. And we thank Alex Dorman and the Hot Texas Swing Band for starting off closing every show. Yeah. And we're excited to be here tonight, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah, this is episode 194, if you go looking for it afterwards, either for video or up on our Podbean page. For audio, and 194.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and we have many, many more to come. So thank you again for being with us tonight. And Jim, who's joining us?
Joining us from Germany, Alfred.
Hello, thank you very much that I can be here.
Alfred Wallace, we are so excited.
That's like a little brain fade here in the beginning.
We are so excited.
You're not the only one who is excited. Me too.
I think it's kind of earlier time, Alfred. Yeah. What time is it there?
It's a very cruel time. It's 3 a.m. in the morning, Friday morning over here in Germany. Yeah. And normally it's a time where I'm sleeping the sleep of the just.
That's a good question, though. When do you normally get up? And do you start writing right away when you get up?
Normally, I get up at 7 a.m. in the morning. Okay. And then I'm doing the whole time writing until noon. Then I take a little break. And in the afternoon, I continue. So it's easy working. And I guess after that show, I will stay up and write a bit.
And Jim, you I know you have a question.
Well, we do. Bobby can't see it. This is my Germany map, see?
Oh, yes, I see.
And you said earlier that you were close to the Austrian border. Are you kind of like sort of southwest, southeast of Munich?
I'm a little bit south. Southwest of Munich, it's a town called Augsburg. I'm not sure if you see that.
There it is. It's on the map.
We have it on the map. Oh, we know right where you are.
Yeah.
That's good.
Oh, how fun.
All right.
And I think you told us the other day, we're going to be getting into your books and your background and everything, but you told us the other day this was going to be your first American interview.
Yes, it is. Yes. And the first also live. So I'm so thankful for this opportunity. And meanwhile, I know I talked to very nice and experienced person. So we'll have fun. I'm absolutely sure.
Well, that's just great. Let's see. Now we learned where Alfred is broadcasting from. Jim, where are we broadcasting from tonight?
Well, I'll tell you. We are in El Paso, Texas, and it's 1881. We are heading to Mrs. Davenport's boarding house to do an interview with the town marshal, Pete Hooker. We are on this back street in not the best part of town. Look, Bobby, two men have a man surrounded, and one has a knife. I think they killed him. Who do you think that poor guy was?
Oh, my gosh. Alfred, who was that guy? His first name was Pete.
Well, Pete Hooker is a young and, sorry to say, inexperienced deputy. He just gets a job to look for a gang of weapons dealers, and he's on their tracks. But as you know now, El Paso has some dark and dangerous streets, and he gets into a trap and is killed.
Mm-hmm. And it's not a spoiler alert, dear readers, because that happens very early in the book. And then the part of the purpose of the book is to find out who did it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a whole domino effect, really. We found a lot of different things that went on.
Want to tell us a little bit about Alfred's background before we get started?
Yeah, let's do that. You know, Alfred Wallen came to us, came to our attention through Nick Whale, CEO of Dusty Saddle Publishing. These words of Nick's introduced us to Alfred Wallen, and these are Nick's words. Alfred Wallen is a German author who made it big in the English language market, particularly with his Kennedy U.S. Marshall series. It's been a consistent bookseller statewide. He's one of the few native German writers to truly break through in American Westerns. His books deliver fast-paced, traditional adventures packed with marshals, outlaws, trails, and high-stakes action, all backed by solid historical details written in a timeless style. Welcome.
And these books that I'm holding up, the three that we'll be talking about, Death in El Paso, which just kicked off the show, The Hunt for Shadow Man. Oh, so good. Lots of twists and turns and unexpected things, Alfred. You had me stumped and surprised along the way. And the last of the three, he's going to talk more about the whole series, is Without Mercy. So these are the first three of how many? Of how many, Alfred?
There are now 12 out on the market. Book 13, 14, and 15 are already in the progress of editing. So there is still much work to do.
And readers, lots of time to you know, read and catch up and be ready when those three come out, right, Alfred?
Yeah, they will have much fun because one of these three who are still in the progress are double-sized. So I just thought I'd do a little surprise for the readers and for the fun they did while reading. I thought I'd give him a double-sized book.
Oh, how fun. Oh, well, you got me hooked. I think I read all. Yeah, I read all three. If there had been a four and a five and a six, I could have gotten on my hands on it. Yeah, I would. Yeah, because I need to know. I want to know.
Exactly.
I want to know.
Exactly.
Well, if these words come out from two experienced Americans, this makes me very glad because I write these books for you all out there. And if you enjoy it, I enjoy it too.
Oh, they're
great. We did enjoy them. It's a great story. And I just read the first book. I didn't chance to read the other two. But it was a good moving story, a lot of action, and it made a lot of sense. And made me ask a lot of questions about what was going on in El Paso in 1881 that I had heard about.
Right, which we'll get to. Before we do that, though, let's just catch up a little bit more about you. It was so interesting that you living in Germany would, and you've written lots of genres besides Westerns, right, Alfred? Yeah. Just tell us a little bit about writing and what you love to write and why the Western has so caught your attention.
I'm still addicted to it after 45 years still, but the Western for me is a very special kind of genre. It has high moral and ethic values. And I grew up as a little kid, you know. I got this addiction from my dad, who loved to read Westerns and also loved to see Western movies. I've seen each and every Western which was on German TV. It begins from Bonanza, The Virginian, Big Welly, High Chaparral, Hondo, The Rifleman, Branded, The Guns of Will Sonnet, Yancey Derringer, and everything. I know the whole series over here in Germany. And I got hooked since, I guess, the early 60s, the early 70s. That was the time when these series were on TV. And my favorite was and still is High Chaparral.
Oh, High Chaparral. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great one.
You know, we were talking earlier. It's like We had no, we used to watch those westerns, of course, too. Yeah. We had no idea you were watching them also.
Yeah, in Germany. Right?
We didn't know. Yeah, we weren't, didn't know the distribution was that worldwide.
But, right.
Well, after I've seen these movies, I was, let's say, about 13 or 14 years old. I decided, well, let's give it a try. I wrote something, never with the intention that I ever got published. I just wrote a few small novels for myself. And in 1980, I thought, now I'm going to try it. I wrote an historical Western novel with foreword and afterword and sent it to a publisher. And it took me 1 year until it was published. So I started out as a Western writer in 1981, which is now 45 years ago.
Yeah, 1981. Yes, we're old enough to remember 1981.
I guess we are. And we remember those movies too.
Let's see. How did you and Nick Whale meet?
Well, I was looking for an American publisher for quite some time, and then I had the opportunity to get to know with Manuela Schneider. I know her personally. She was looking for a publisher in Germany. I was looking for a publisher in the USA. So I gave her the address of EK2, where she is now and working there. And she made the contact with Nick Mail. So we supported each other. And this is what I'm always saying. Western writers should support each other.
Yes.
They are a big family. And this experience I'm making now in the USA, and I couldn't have found another publisher like Nick Whalis, and he is doing very much for me. He supports me from the beginning, and without him, I wouldn't have that success.
Yes.
And, did we say that Nick and Nessie Saddle, they're in the UK.
They're in England.
They're not over here in the States.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
All the editors in the Westerns.
Yeah, it's an international company. Nick is in the USA. The title covers are done by Kevin Diamond, who lives on the West Coast in the USA. And my editor, Todd Parcelo, lives on the Philippines. So we are working around the world.
Wow. Around the world. I had a thought. Although you are watching us on Facebook as though we were a Facebook live event, we actually use the StreamYard platform. So we want to say a hello to everybody watching right now on Facebook. If you're commenting or you're hoping you have a question that you'd love us to answer, unfortunately, we don't see that. But please go ahead and leave it there, because when the show is over, I go immediately back to Facebook, and we will acknowledge. And if you have a question for Alfred, or you're saying hi to Alfred and you want to be sure that you know, he'll be able to see that when we go back, if that makes sense to anybody. Nick, we know you will be watching. So hello, Nick.
In fact, I know that he is watching because he contacted me about 20 minutes ago. So Nick, I hope you enjoy.
Yeah, so he's up.
Well, he's amazing. I don't think he ever sleeps, you know?
Now, you published a book with that was part of the Timber U.S. Marshall series, and it was a co-write with Robert Henlon. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? And then we want you to also share about your American Chronicles 50 Years of History series. Tell us a little bit about both of those.
Okay. I published several standalone novels with Dusty Saddle Publishing, but as a German author who tries to enter the American market, it was quite difficult. So it was Nick's idea to do a co-write with Robert Henlon, who is much better known than myself. And I wrote three novels in the Timber U.S. Marshall series. And in fact, they were a huge success. Each three of them were in the top 100. And so Nick said, now, you're doing fine. Now you get your own Marshall series. And that's how Kennedy was born. The name Kennedy was Nick's idea. I did the rest, and we were successful.
Yeah.
And as far as you mentioned, the American Chronicles, 250 years of history. Well, each and every one of us know that America has its 250th birthday this year. And we were looking around. There was no publisher who was trying to publish anything for this special event. But as you know, Dusty Saddle Publishing now, they did. And they started the America 250 series. And I had some other novels with much more volumes, about 50, 60, 70,000 words or so. And Nick said, Alfred, you have your separate American Chronicles series. So I started with that. The first one was about Lewis and Clark. The second one was about the Santa Rita massacre with Mangas Coloradas in the lead. The third one was about Daniel Boone and the Kentucky Pioneers. And the fourth one, which will be forthcoming very soon, is about Stonewall Jackson's last days before he died.
Ah, okay. So three are out and four is on its way.
Yeah.
It sounds like. And you said
it will be a total of 10 books, which I have done.
Okay. And you mentioned Daniel Boone. And I think, did you have a writing exercise you had to do as a youth, as a student, that had to do with Daniel Boone?
Yes. In fact, I had. I was, when I was, let's say, about 10 or 11 years old, we had an English teacher who brought us a little small book, which was called Pioneer Days of Kentucky, written by a certain James Walker McSpadden. And our task, it was to read the novel and then continue the novel with our own words. And that's when I found out that there must be something, a certain kind of talent, because I wrote 2 hours and couldn't be stopped. So this was the first time when I found out that maybe I can write.
Oh, speaking of writers, we're going to take our first little short break since we're talking about writers. Are you a writer? Are you looking to increase your book's visibility? Maybe you're eager to put together a public book tour, but you don't know how to do it. Or you're thinking about refreshing your website or your social media presence. Here's a word from our sponsors, who are all perfect with all of those and more things for you as a writer. Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. More with Alfred when we come back. Don't go away. You're invited to join the team. Up your author brand when you team up with Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, specializing in author branding, digital book tours, book reviews, and social media. Experienced, trusted, effective. Get noticed. Visit BlueCottageAgency.com and ClicksByMadison.com. Proud sponsors of Rendezvous with a Writer.
The lawman faced the outlaw on a dusty western street. The people watched and held their breath, hearing their hearts beat. The lawman held a shotgun, wore a badge upon his chest. Couldn't help but wonder who would pass this test, who would pass this test. It was the 1850s in a little town out west. Way back then and still today, the badge calls to the test. Men and women stand up, much like way back then. Protecting lives, uphold the law. Thanks to the lawmen, thanks to the lawmen.
We've just been listening to Lawman by our great friend, John Burstam, and from his album, A Daybreak Moon. You know, we know John for a long time.
Oh, that's such a great song.
Yeah, he, in his good days, man, he performed that. That was great.
Yeah, so welcome back.
Welcome back. Did we skip that part?
The song yeah. fits perfectly to the story.
Well, when you were mentioning before about Western writers supporting Western writers, and we absolutely agree, and then we would also include the poets and the songwriters, because everybody is sharing and working with the same, you know, they're all in it together. And yeah. we as readers, as listeners, as audience, fans, it's wonderful when we can touch it in all of these different mediums. But anyway, we love to bring music on when we can.
Well, let's talk about the Kennedy Marshall series, right?
Yeah.
So.
Okay. I'm going to hold up the first three books again. And then, yeah, just he's gonna give us a little
yeah, a little inspiration and a storyline.
Yeah, what got it all started for you?
Well, I thought, as you know, there are many U.S. Marshall series with Dusty Saddle Publishing, so we know that these books are selling. So I wrote a series which will be sold very perfectly, and my intention was. I'm creating a storyline which is ongoing. You see, you have to read book two after book one ends. You have continue in book three, and this goes on until book 12. And my idea was to create, let's say, a criminal organization who is very influential in Texas. The original idea was the Santa Fe Ring. And so I thought, well, Santa Fe Ring is historical, so why not creating the El Paso Ring? These are three mighty persons who are controlling the market, who are controlling the banks, the financial systems. And Pete Hooker was the first marshal who found out that this organization is organizing a weapons deal to Mexico. He failed in his task, and that's why Kennedy stepped in. And he's looking for Pete's murderer and, of course, also the man behind the scene. That's how the storyline goes. And the El Paso Ring continues in each and all books.
Did you need to do a lot of research?
I had to, because you asked me earlier why in 1881. Well, in 1881, there was the first train connection to El Paso. There was already the border bridge, but 1 year later, there was another bridge for transporting goods. Without this bridge, the people had to transport all their goods by ferry to the Mexican town of Ciudad Juarez. So the bridge, my bridge, is already existing in 1881 because of traumatic reasons.
Well, you have in book one, when we meet at one point, we meet Jim Kennedy, Marshall Jim Kennedy, and he's taking the train from Austin, where I think he's been with the governor.
Yeah, Austin.
And he's on his way to El Paso, and there's all kinds of things that happen on that train ride. Yeah. And you tell us, as the author, you tell us it's an 800-mile ride.
Yeah,
and it's going to take about 11 hours. That's like us taking the train from Albuquerque to California, to Los Angeles. So we know what that's like. But we thought, well, how would Alfred have known? He can't just put that there without doing some research.
Well, I did some. I read about 18, 19 hours by train, by various directions. So I'm hoping it is correct.
Well, from our background, our experience, 800 miles, 11 hours on the Amtrak train is exactly right.
Yeah, and with some stops, but then not a lot of stops. You know, it makes some, and then it makes none, and then, you know, picks up again. So how fun. So there are some other things that talking about research and kind of that you do ground this in historical fact. You bring in Fort Bliss, which I know, spoiler alerts, by the way, but it's fun to sort of talk about some things that a reader will encounter. So Fort Bliss, tell us a little bit about Fort Bliss and how you decided to bring that.
Well, I looked at the map, so it's not far away from El Paso. At that time, it didn't have that importance like it is today. It was a little bit smaller, but I found also out that there was an Army Intelligence Service, which was also built up in 1881, and so it was a perfect combination for me to involve certain dark characters from the Army in that weapons deal. And this Captain Will Rowland from Fort Bliss is one of these men behind. The Shadow Man is another one. So the Army plays an important part because this intelligence service has organized the weapons deal to Mexico.
Oh, these are just really great books. We're just gonna say that again.
What was El Paso like back in the 1880s?
Yeah, 1881 or so.
Yeah.
Well, it had a certain importance because with the coming of the railroad track, the population grew. There were some difficulties with customs to Mexico. I also read that the Rio Grande changed its riverbed sometimes, so Mexican ground became Texas ground, and the Alamo was long ago. The Mexican War was long ago, but as far as I read, were still certain kind of tensions between Texas and Mexico, and it wasn't easy to go to Mexico without recognizing the danger, because Ciudad Juarez was an important town for Mexico, but as an unexperienced gringo, so I might say, you can really get easy into danger if you don't look what's right behind you.
Yeah.
It seems like it's about the same now as it was then.
Especially after dark.
Yeah.
After dark. there's border crossings, and the bridge is a big part of that. It seemed like it was a little different to cross the bridge from one side from the other side. You want to talk about that for a moment?
Yeah, well, I put in a control on the Texas side and a control at the Mexican side. So I thought if there are some policemen on the Mexican side, they should control the riders who come into Mexico. But as far as you know by now, there is a certain man named Miguel Otero. He is a Mexican ranger, and he wants to throw the governor out of his office and become the new governor of that province. So there were some political dangers happening, and this weapon steal is very good for Miguel Otero, so he can give these weapons to his men and they can start a revolution. That's what's behind, and that's why there are certain control stations so that the people can find out if there are criminals crossing the border. Sometimes they find them, sometimes they don't.
Yes. Now, one of the books, book two, you co-wrote with Paul L. Thompson. So tell us a little bit about your, when you do co-write, a little bit about that process. Because I couldn't tell there'd been a co-writer. It just felt seamless in the reading of it.
Well, I've done that a couple of times over here in Germany, so it's quite easy. What you need first is a storyline, then talk to each other who takes over this part and which is my part. After we have agreed to that, I start to write the first chapter, send it to Paul. Paul looked over it. Then he wrote the second chapter, sent it to me. And that's how we went through the book. And after everything was ready, we checked it again so that our writing style is not too different from each other. And I'm sure you don't know which parts I have written and what Paul has written.
No. Your co-write was very, very seamless.
Yeah, seamless.
I was going to ask a kind of a kidding question and just saying, well, did you ever get in a disagreement? No, we can't write it that way. No, that doesn't work.
No. As I mentioned before, the DSP writers are one great family, and our only intention is to sell the book. And we're doing everything that this book comes on the market, it is promoted, and then the readers enjoy it. It's quite easy.
Yeah. I think for some writers, it may be hard to think about what they're writing is going to be a product. You know, you get, I can understand getting emotionally tied into the project. And at some point when there may be suggestions for you need to do this or you need to do that, or, you know, this needs to be rewritten, the editing through the editing process, it might be. But the editors and everybody's really trying to. We want it on the market, you know, and we want to find readers, and we want it on the market. So it's interesting to me that you got it. You're writing for an end result of happy readers and readers that will want to come back and back and back, right?
Yes, but it's quite easy. I'm always telling other writers over here in Germany, the real work begins after you have written the work, the end. So I'm always thinking about what I can do in promotions, what I can do to sell it. I'm doing videos, I'm doing interviews, I'm doing regularly postings on Facebook. Everything which contributes to the fact that I want to sell is fulfilled by me. And Nick knows that, and he's supporting me with other additional postings and videos. So selling is a very important part for authors.
And we get that.
What's it all about? It seems like you're selling a lot of books.
Yeah, finding the audience.
Seems like it's working.
Finding the audience.
Do you still write anything besides Western these days? Do you still write a science fiction story once in a while? Or
I've written all kinds of genres: Western, crime, fantasy, science fiction, horror, historical novels about pirates, fantasy. The only thing I haven't written are novels in the kind of, let's say, emergency rooms with doctors and nurses. But everything else I have done, but still my favorite genre, number one, is the Western. And this wouldn't change.
Yeah, yeah. When you were working on the series and the ideas are just coming, do you also kind of receive ideas for the next series? Or do you just concentrate on this series till whenever the end book, if there is such a thing, comes?
Well, currently I'm now writing the Kennedy U.S. Marshall series. So it's an ongoing series.
Okay.
I write it as long as it sells.
Okay.
But if it doesn't sell, which I'm hopefully not hoping that this happens, I have already about 5 or 6 different ideas in my virtual brain. I'm always have a plan B if plan one doesn't work, but I'm very thankful that plan one still works, and I can write everything. And the interesting thing is, if I have an idea, I present this idea to Nick, and really 1 or 2 hours later he says, well, give it a go, do it. And then
Well, we're talking about books, so we're going to step away for another moment to tell you where you can find the books of many of the guests on Rendezvous with a Writer, and that is our affiliate page, our Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. We're going to take a break. We're going to tell you about that. We're going to have another short piece of music, and we'll be back with more with Alfred. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Not everyone can do it. Takes a special kind. Willing to walk the walk, their life on the line. They bravely take the challenge each and every day. Trusting God will keep them safe each step along the way. When the heart behind the badge is made of solid gold, they're not out to be a hero or have their story told. Trying to make a difference between right and wrong. The heart behind the badge is still beating strong.
It's been listening to The Heart Behind the Badge, sung by Joni Harman, one of our favorite singers. Just a great song.
It is another great song. And we're back with Alfred Wallen.
We are.
Yes.
And we were I think we want to talk about characters,
I think we're going to talk about characters.
Now, we know, Alfred, you always have control of all these folks, you know, but do they ever surprise you?
Sometimes, yes. Of course, I know how Jim Kennedy reacts because he's the main character of the series, but Kennedy has also a sidekick in this named Don Henderson. As far as I know, Bobby, you like him very much. And just imagine him like a character like Walter Brennan or the Stumpy in Rio Bravo with the John Wayne movie. He's just the one who taught Kennedy everything for his marshal job. And in one of his last jobs, he got a bullet and was crippled. But Kennedy knows how much he owes to Don Henderson. Therefore, he asked the governor if Don can accompany him on his mission. And this works very well, I guess.
They're a good team. They're a really good team. And I think that's one reason I like Don, because when we all eventually get to a certain age, it's very easy for those around us to say, oh, too old for that, or, oh, we'll tire easily. That's not a... And Don's kind of there, and he just refuses. Once he's given the opportunity to come back, he jumps at it. And he shows us over and over again that he's still got the stuff. And he saves Jim a few times, doesn't he?
Yeah. And be sure the old guys are no weak guys.
No.
No. No, hey, actually, so he brings up some revelations and some things to Mr. Kennedy that might know you need to do it this way.
And he takes some beatings too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I don't know. He gets back up again, and I always go, oh, good, oh, good. He brought him up again.
Yeah. Well, Kennedy is no Gene Autry or Roy Rogers. They always win the battle, but I have to keep it realistic if Kennedy loses sometimes a fight, but be sure he will come back at the end and he will win. Kennedy always wins.
And he's very, let's talk a little bit more about him. He's very cool under fire, of course.
Yeah, just
and No, go ahead.
Just imagine him that he is looking like a younger Tom Selleck. So you have a certain imagination of how he looks like.
Yeah. He's so wise from all of his experience. He can anticipate what's coming and be prepared. So he's always sort of a step ahead when there's conflict.
He had a good teacher in Don Henderson, so he taught him everything what he should know. And before he became a U.S. Marshal, he was just living with his parents on a farm, and these parents were killed by Comanche warriors from Cuanaparca. Mm-hmm. And so when his parents were dead, he buried them, and then he hunted the murderers. And he was also with the army when Cuanaparca gave up his fight. And then he heard that Governor Robert Pierce Fullerton was looking for new marshals, and then he joined the team, and Don was his teacher.
Yeah.
You
give him a really interesting background. I think one of the things that I really enjoyed as a reader is there is conflict, and there is conflict almost, I would say, on every page.
Yeah.
And it's fast. Things get happen fast, resolve fast. The next thing is coming. How do you, as a writer, how do you approach the writing of great conflict? That's a question.
Difficult to explain in a few words, but let me say one thing. When I write, I don't have a list of characters, what they're wearing, what they are doing. Everything is happening in my mind. So while I'm writing, there is a movie in my mind. And the only thing which I have to do is describing this movie to the readers so that they can see what I see.
And that is what it is. It does feel cinematic to me as well. Yeah. I know you have questions. Jump right in there.
Well, we had a question here. You know, a marshal gets killed here. It reminds me, is it difficult to still off, Jersey?
I didn't understand. Can you please?
We were talking about Pete Hooker, you know, who was killed early in the book. And I was just wondering, is it difficult to kill off a character?
Not really. Sometimes I have to decide who is among the living and who will be among the dead. With Pete, it was a little bit easy. He was nothing more than an opener for the series, but I still can imagine that this young, unexperienced marshal was really afraid when the moment of his death came. Sometimes I have to kill characters, also some very important sidekicks. It happens.
Yeah.
It does happen.
Yeah.
We want to ask you about a couple other characters?
Sure.
Well, we got this fun lady, Mrs. Davenport. What's she kind of like?
Yeah, tell us about her.
Well, she just owns a pension and rents rooms for people who are coming to El Paso. And so when Kennedy and Henderson came to El Paso, they needed a place to stay. So they went to Mrs. Henderson's place. This will be interesting for you, Bobby Jean, because there will come a time in book 8 and 9 when you will find out about a certain romantic relationship between Don Henderson and Mrs. Davenport. Don stays with her while Kennedy continues his ride to Mexico.
You know, you hadn't thought of that about it. Well, you only got 3 books and you already hadn't thought about that.
I kind of wondered because he kind of does take a bit of a beating and he recovers. They do get rooms there whenever they're in El Paso. Yeah. But he just kind of stays there. And I thought, oh, this will be the perfect opportunity for her to do the, you know, the caring. Yeah. I know she's sort of she's the mistress of the boarding house, but she will do a little above and beyond just bringing meals, right? She's going and she is, and she's also, she is sharp. She's discerning. She's and right, she, right. And she, also, maybe it was in book 3, but Kennedy gives her some direction to get the word to the, you know, she right away, she was like, I know, okay, I can do that. She's not timid.
She's living in El Paso. She knows the people. Kennedy doesn't, and Henderson either. So she supports these two marshals with her background knowledge. And when it comes to a fight in book 4, which you still haven't read it, gets together some men who support Kennedy and Henderson in their fight against this mighty rancher.
Yeah. And she's a good cook.
Yeah, she is.
Okay, Tom, you can ask for one more.
One more?
One more character.
Well, we got these two guys, Bob Foster and Nolan Dobbs. Did they ever do anything good in their life?
Well, they are just outlaws, I would like to say. And, you know, each outlaw has to face his enemy. And it's clear from the beginning that outlaws don't win in the Kennedy series. So they have to face their destiny. Mm-hmm. Some earlier, some later, but that's the fact. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Do you have a particular writing style? Is a particular day, time of the day you write, or you just kind of every time opportunity comes, or you just start writing?
It was difficult when I was a full-time salesman. I was working for a newspaper selling advertisements for 20 years. I'm now since 3 years I'm retired, so I'm still working part-time for the company, but I have more time for writing these days. So my intention is to increase the book production significantly. Normally, I get up at 7 in the morning, working a bit for my company, and then I'm writing, and the whole day is writing with breaks in between. But if it becomes dark, my aim is finished. I intend to write 1,500 or 2,000 words each day.
Okay.
Working on a laptop or writing longhand, or what do you like to write on?
Longhand? No, never, ever. I'm working on a laptop. I write the story as it is. I have I have a storyline in my mind, and then I follow this storyline. I just have to fill out the chapter. I write what I do. I always starting with book one, chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. Yeah. I don't write chapter 10 first before one. I just write the story when it's finished. I'm reading it again, correcting some mistakes here and there. And then it goes to the editor, and I start with book two.
What, book two? Do you write in German, Alfred, or do you write in English?
No, I'm not so perfect to write in English. I write in German.
So you write in German, yeah.
And there is a computer program called DeepL. DeepL translates it into American English. After that is translated, I check it again to correct what I'm able to, and then it goes to my editor, Todd A. Barslow, who makes a perfect American English out of that. But we also
just fascinating. Yeah,
and we also have German versions of Kennedy. There are novels in German language because I want that the German people also know about Kennedy.
Sure. So speaking of that, we're going to just go ahead and kind of make sure, Alfred, that everybody knows where they can find you, follow you, purchase your books.
Well, this is very easy because if you look for my name, Alfred Wallon, I'm the only Western writer who has that name. There is no other Alfred Wallon who writes books. You can find me on Amazon. You can find me on Facebook. You can check my website. If you just Google the name Alfred Wallon, you will find everything what you need.
And what are you working on next?
Currently, I'm checking Kennedy Book 14, the double size. I have to check it. Yeah. And after that, I will continue my storyline about Kennedy. I still haven't found a direction where it will go, but I'm sure that The El Paso Ring might return someday. Currently now it's standalone novels, just to make a test if the readers like that too. But then I have to pick up the storyline. I'm working also on another idea, which is not Westerns. I'm trying to do something like Jack Reacher from Lee Child.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
It was just a small product in a conversation with Nick. And as you know, Nick by now, he just said, do it. And I'm doing developing a storyline now.
Jim, do you have a quote?
We do.
All right.
We take a quote from the first book. U.S. Marshal Jim Kennedy has just had a shootout with one of the bad guys. And the bad guy says, "You won, Kennedy," he said in a clenched voice, "but only now and today. Against the El Paso Ring, you can't compete. You're already a dead man walking, only you don't know it yet."
It's a good quote. I guess it's from Captain Roland, right?
Yes. It was. I was going to keep that a secret.
It was at the end of book one, I guess. And so the readers are really forced to buy book two. Otherwise, they don't know what will happen.
That is correct.
Alfred, thank you so much for getting up so early and for being with us this morning. Mm-hmm. It's just wonderful to have you. We want to say a big thank you to you.
And I have to say the same thank to you because it was an opportunity I was always looking for. And it was so nice to talk to you. It just as we are sitting in the living room and have a chat and enjoying what we are doing. And that's the most important thing. Yeah.
And that's exactly what we always hope for. So thank you for sharing that. We want to thank all of you that have joined us tonight on Facebook, or we'll be picking this up as a podcast on video or on audio. We want to thank our producer, our engineer, and our DJ tonight, LA Talk Radio's owner and founder, Sam Hassan. Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. If you follow us on Facebook and such, on Instagram, Janelle Madison of Clicks by Madison does beautiful graphics. And we could not look like we do, Janelle, without you. So thank you so much. Let's see. We want to thank Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band, John Bergstrom and Joni Harms for tonight's music. And next week, we finish out July. I can't believe it. Next week, July 30th, author John Bradshaw is back with us. He was with us with his first book, which was Elmer Kelton's The Familiar Stranger, and he's coming back with a book that was just released, I think in December of 2025, Elmer Kelton's The Blessing, another Huey Calloway adventure. I did start this today, can't put it down. Eager to talk to John again next week. And do you have a parting comment?
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing.
We'll keep reading.
And we'll keep reading. Keep writing. And we'll see you down the trail. Good night. Good morning, Alfred. You can go to bed now.
Yes, I do. And thank you once again so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.